to the International House of Horrors.
Hello, valued guests, and welcome back to the International House of Horrors, your sanctuary of spooky for all things terrible, horrible, brutal, bloody, and the macabre. I am one of your curators, Joe Merle.
And I'm the other one. I'm Josh. Hi, how are you?
I am doing good, man. It is Super Bowl Sunday over here in the States. It's a big day.
Oh, yes.
Big day, yes. We're playing our funny football where we throw the ball through the air. But the Super Bowl It's huge, and I've heard rumor that we might again get another Netflix, big release this Super Bowl. Because you remember last year when they dropped Cloverfield Paradox, they were like, "Hey, yeah, here's a trailer, and you can watch it after the Super Bowl." Which, in some ways, I really liked. There's a couple things I didn't like about it, and that was the movie specifically. But the idea of just getting it out of nowhere, especially if it's on Netflix. Because if you're going to release it, the Super Bowl is watched, I think, by 100 million plus. Like, it's one of, the biggest viewership events in the world. So, I mean, you can't get a bigger audience than that, you know, if you're going to drop a new trailer and release a movie. And we usually get a lot of movie trailers themselves during that. Now, does anybody over there watch the Super Bowl? It would be late as shit over there.
Yeah, it's an all-night thing, but there's lots of people. Like, actually, just a few hours ago, a friend asked in our WhatsApp chat group if anyone wants to join on Super Bowl Sunday today. But most of the people answered, no, I got work tomorrow.
Yeah, that's the hard part. Because if it's not till, say, so it wouldn't even start till around midnight or 12:30 over there. So it's pretty late.
If it's around the same time as the Oscars, I think it's playing around the same time usually, right?
Like, I think the Oscars is a little bit later. The Super Bowl starts around 6:30 over here. I think kickoff is 6 or 6:30.
Because I know I did the Oscars a few times, and they're always going to 6 a.m. in the morning. So,
which is crazy. Especially for the Oscars. You know my feelings about the Oscars. I'm not a huge fan, but I know a lot of people really, really enjoy and have big Oscar parties, which can be fun, getting a bunch of people together. But
that's the fun thing about it. We're always sitting down with like five or six people and just having a blast until the first one falls asleep.
Right. And that I could see getting together with a group of people, and then you're enjoying more the event, I think, of being with company and being with friends than you are the actual Oscars. Because the actual Oscars, to me, the politics have just gotten too much.
Yeah.
I'm just like, I don't want to hear about it. And this year, there's some good contenders out there, but nobody I'm super excited for. Like, I liked a lot of the Oscar movies. Some movies I didn't. Some I haven't seen yet that I still
need.
Yeah,
you got
to
see the favorite.
I do. Because I absolutely... Did you ever watch The Killing of a Sacred Deer?
Yes, in cinemas. It's great.
Oh, so good.
I'm just a big fan of Yorgos Lanthimos. All his movies, I've seen almost all of them, and they're all unique and great. Like, have you seen Dogtooth?
No, that's the one I keep telling you that I'm going to get around to and watch, which I really want to, because like you, I've liked every one of them. I've only seen, I know I've seen The Lobster, The Killing of the Sacred Deer, and I haven't seen Dogtooth yet, and I want to see The Favorite really bad. Because, you're right. He's just such a unique visionary when he makes some weird-ass movies. But you had told me, I know the only thing you had said to me about The Favorite was that it was his most normal of all of his movies.
Especially the acting, because usually his characters all have this stoic acting that always feels like they're not really acting. And that's kind of missing here. Like, they're actually acting in this one.
But I like both of them. Emma Stone and who is it? Rachel Weisz is opposite her are both. And then I heard the woman who played the queen, which I don't remember who played the queen, but that she did an amazing job.
She is really good. I want to give a shout out to her because she is really good. Let me just look up her name because I forgot it right now. But she's actually, I think, even nominated for Best
Supporting. Was she lead or supporting?
She was lead as well. Like,
right on.
Olivia Colman.
Oh, okay.
She's really, really good in this.
Yeah, as soon as The Favorite hits digital, I'll pick that up because I'm just such a big fan of his. And I like The Lobster a lot, but The Killing of a Sacred Deer blew my mind. I was like, what is going on? The shit is bonkers.
That was the movie I saw it in cinema and people walked out of the movie. And I think that's the sign of a great movie.
Right.
if you manage to make people walk out and it's not bad. Like it's not a boring movie.
Where
it's
you just, either love it or hate it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And would you say that's a horror movie since we're on a horror podcast here? Because
yeah, absolutely.
Especially Killing of a Sacred Deer.
Yeah, Killing of a Sacred Deer for sure. More than because it did have, I mean, monsters and you know, you had a lot of weird elements going on at the same time. Yeah, but I would say for sure that one's horror. Now, with that being said, all of his movies are they're clearly his though. Like even calling it a horror movie, you would say it was his horror movie and his kind of the same way you would. I'm trying to think of somebody else who doesn't do a lot of and even though some people might not like it very much, like Tusk is a Kevin Smith horror movie. Like you can still see Kevin Smith all over it, even though it's a – and I really like Tusk, but I think I like Tusk primarily because Michael Parks is just so good.
I still got to see Tusk. But another director who we're going to talk about a horror movie of his, but it's also his horror movie. Like we've seen a few movies – because that's a perfect segue. Let's just go right into it.
And you know what, though? So, yes, let's – because I don't think this is a horror movie at all. So let's set it up what we're going to be talking about today. Last week, you and I agreed to each watch a movie that the other had seen, and we were like, hey, this – okay, I'll watch this, you watch that, and then we'll talk about these two movies. The first being Tag – was the one that you had watched. It was on Netflix, and you had told... And what's his name one more time?
Sion Sono.
Okay, Sion Sono, who did Suicide Club, which you had recommended to me a while back. I really enjoyed Suicide Club. So I agreed I would watch Sion Sono's Tag, and you agreed you would watch... I don't know if you pronounce it... I want to say it's Leon, but I don't. It's Damien. I don't know if it's Leon or Leone, because it could be, I think, pronounced either way. I should really have... looked that up, but you agreed to watch Terrifier, the third movie in the All Hallows Eve. Well, All Hallows Eve was the first one, and the first two movies were anthology horror. First, they're both enjoyable. The first one did have Art the Clown. He's kind of the connecting thread of all these short horror stories. And then the second one, you had a different character who connected them all. And then the third movie, Terrifier, we get more of a traditional slasher with Art the Clown playing the kind of title slasher role. So we agreed to watch these two movies. I sat down yesterday to watch Tag. You had mentioned it, so we'll start with Tag. And we can begin with, I don't think this was a horror movie at all. And
so IMDb says it's action fantasy horror. And mostly, I mean, it's got... In the very first scene, it's got a school bus of like 20 or 30 schoolgirls being cut in half. So it's got horrific elements.
Agreed. I do agree that some of the stuff is horrific, but Saving Private Ryan opens up on a beach watching just hundreds of people being massacred and slaughtered. Does that make Saving Private Ryan a horror movie? It is horrific what had happened, but I think traditionally... if somebody asked me what kind of movie this was, I would say almost like a, I don't know, sci-fi techno thriller. There was so much going on in this movie, but there was nothing to me that was truly that screamed horror movie. Now that's not to say I did not enjoy it. That is not to say I didn't enjoy it. There was a lot of this movie that I really liked, but I think in regards to horror, and part of me doesn't even know, you know, if he was just writing the script and was like, well, let's try this. Yeah, maybe not. Let's try that. We'll turn this way instead of that way. So I don't know if
really
I'd call
no
it
no idea how he wrote this. Like, I think it's written by him. Yeah, like it's based written on the original story, but he wrote
the screenplay.
Movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is like, he did Suicide Club before, which we haven't talked on the podcast about, I think, but that's a horror movie, right? That's.
Yeah, I think because you almost have the, what did it, it reminded me of something, a little bit like the Happening or even kind of how Bird Box was, where people just out of nowhere started killing themselves.
Yeah.
And I think what makes Suicide Club and this creepy in a way is that you always have these cool age Japanese girls who are the ones, or Japanese students. I think more in Suicide Club, you had more male students, whereas this, it was primarily female students because they were at a female school. But yeah, Suicide Club, I think, would lend or lean a little more towards the horror side, whereas this one, there was so much science fiction to me going on at the same time. I feel like this was, and especially once we get towards the end, which was the only part of the movie I really didn't like, but we'll talk about the movie as a whole. So like you said, movie opens up, group of schoolgirls, and first things first, this movie was beautifully shot. Like, it's gorgeous. Like, even from on the school bus, I was like, man, everything is just, you did get a lot of drone shots in there, which I thought were used effectively. But everything is very clean, you know, great use of color throughout. But we open up with these girls on a school bus, and this is all you had told me about when you're like, watch it. You're like, I'll just tell you the opening. So our lead character, Misku, she is writing in a journal. She drops her pen, bends over to pick up the pen, stays down there for a long time. Like, she's really contemplating life while she's looking at her pen. And then all of a sudden, the school bus, this violent wind just comes gushing through, rips the whole top of the bus off, and cuts everybody else on the bus in half.
And we get the nice scene of the legs still sitting there and blood squirting out. Like,
right.
We got to say, the effects weren't that good. Like, there's some cheesy CGI in there. But I'm not sure if it's on purpose.
Yeah, the CGI I wasn't a big fan of, but at certain points, at other times it was fine. But the practical effects I actually really liked, and I felt held true to Japanese cinema in that I've been rewatching the Lone Wolf and Cub series. I don't know if you're familiar with Lone Wolf and Cub. Oh, they're amazing. There's six original movies that were all based on manga, and all six have the Criterion treatment.
And, oh, wow.
But those were later. They took pieces from most of them, but primarily the second one, which is Lone Wolf and Cub, Baby Cart at the River Styx, and they turned that into Shogun Assassin in 1980. And that's actually one of the things I love about those movies, is that you get that just half of a body with blood just spraying out like a fountain, you know. So I really enjoyed that. I thought it was, you know, a lot of old Japanese martial arts flicks that I watch, kind of the exploitation side of it, they actually use that a lot, and I thought it was really cool that he put that in there, and you just get these fountains of blood because you just had all these cut in half schoolgirls with just blood shooting out like a fountain, which I thought was funny. And the wind kept going. The wind chopped another bus in half, and then
it followed her, right? The wind followed her, like she ran away.
Yeah, she was running, and it was cutting apart people on the side of the road. There was people standing there, and it was just cutting them all in half.
Just everyone getting. Again, that's the opening scene of the movie.
Yeah, it reminded me a little bit of Ghost Ship. Did you ever see Ghost Ship?
No.
So Ghost Ship is a 90s horror. I want to say it was 90, maybe late 90s.
Yes, I have even seen that. I own that, yeah.
Where the wire rope at the beginning of the movie comes slinging down and cuts everybody in half on the ship.
Right.
So yeah, she starts running and meets some people along the road, and then she ends up down by the river, and the river's just full of bodies. There's just bodies everywhere and people all over trees. And she cleans herself up. This is where the movie takes its first weird turn. She cleans herself up. Grabs one of the outfits off one of the other girls who was already dead by the river, puts it on, and then takes off running. And then she just ends up at school, and everyone around her, who are our other big main character, Aki, was kind of her friend, best friend type character. They meet up. She knows something's weird, but she's, did I always go to this school? And this is the first time I was like, okay, what's going on?
Yeah.
And, what's really going on here? And so she meets up with her, they go to class, and they decide they're going to – oh, but should we just say we're going to spoil both of these movies?
We gave warning. We said where people can find the movies.
Yeah.
We're going to spoil them completely.
Yeah, we're going to spoil them all the way through. And she starts explaining what's happening. Like, I had this really weird dream. All these people died. And so it was Aki – Mitsuku Sur, who they just called her Sur because of S-U-R, which was short for surreal. She was kind of like a anti-establishment. She had the like dog collar type with spikes on it, necklace on. And then there was the one other girl. I can't remember her name. I apologize for that. But they all decide they're going to skip school and go play by the water. And they do. They take off running.
They do. And they get into a deep conversation about multiverses and what you usually do as a teenage girl in Japan. You talk about multiverses and what happens.
Alternate realities.
Yeah.
Which I thought was a great concept. And I thought that's where this movie was going to go. And I was like, oh, this is really cool. Because Sir does, and she does a good job of explaining it. And I did enjoy that stuff just kept happening out of nowhere. She's like, "You, the only way you can disrupt the multiverse is to do something completely spontaneous." And she acts like she's going to go jump in the water, and then a crocodile just comes out and starts eating the other girl. Nom, 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 there's blood everywhere. And then we quickly jump back to her head, and she's like, "Well, that didn't happen, but it could have happened in another universe." And then they find like perfectly white pillows on the, and they start having a pillow fight in the on the shore of the river, and they again continue to have these conversations about like how you can't, because they talk about the multiverse, then they start talking about destined, like a predestined fate,
yeah,
and how they all may be trapped in some destiny. They take off, go back to the school, and. Did you notice that in the school when everything was happening, it was the music from Psycho?
No.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it was 100% the music. And I think the other music was from The Walking Dead.
That's what I thought as well, but I looked it up and it seems not to be. Like, it doesn't, like, they would have credited it somewhere, but it doesn't say anything in the credits about The Walking Dead. But that's what I thought as well. Yeah. The opening music, right away. It sounds
and
that comes back every now and then, right?
Right, like right. I'm almost 100% sure that was The Walking Dead, and I am 1,000% sure that it was the music from Psycho.
Okay, so I just saw that in the trivia it says that the music is used by The Walking Dead, but then in the actual soundtrack listing, it's not included.
Does
but
it
the
list-
trivia says. The music in the background scene is in the Walking Dead opening score.
Does it say anything about the music from Psycho? Because
no,
because I know that's there.
Yeah, I gotta listen back to that. I want to hear that because at least I don't remember it, but I remember the Walking Dead. That sounded perfectly like Walking Dead. I felt the same way.
Yeah. So I actually really enjoyed the use of music throughout this whole thing because it would tonally change, and. Yeah. That's kind of my thoughts of, excuse me, it was more of a sci-fi in that you had a lot of, and once we get to the ending, I think it explains a lot more of why it went in all these different directions, but you had some pretty intense action sequences, some more science fiction, I would say even with the, you know, giant crocodile, because it didn't look like a normal crocodile. It looked like, so maybe that could even be a monster movie. But I feel like it changes tonally very quick. You even get some good martial arts that we'll get into in a little bit. So back at the school, and I was also interested before we get inside the school, that did you notice how outside the school everything looked very dead? Like the school looked like it was run down. Like it didn't really look like a school that was lived in.
It felt weird. Like everything around felt weird in general. I felt like it never felt normal in general. Like there was, I didn't feel exactly the feeling you just said that it was that it felt empty and not lived in. I just had the feeling the whole time something still feels completely weird and out of place.
Yeah. For me, it was the basketball court had weeds growing up through all the cracks, and if everything looked like there, it hadn't been taken care of. But then inside, everything looked very clean and, you know,
even sterile almost.
Right, right, yeah. And there, so we've got this idea of everybody lives twice. They've had this conversation about multiverses. We're back in the school, and out of fucking nowhere, you just get this school massacre. But it's done by the teachers.
Yeah, by all the teachers. I love that. I think she sees the pillow on the floor and picks it up and throws it to her friend.
Yeah.
Because the whole time the teacher was really, really playing with them as well. Like, she knew they skipped class, but she didn't say anything. And I think that was the same teacher. She was all the time really nice. And then all of a sudden, now you quit talking, and pulls out an Uzi and shoots them all down.
Shoots everybody in the classroom, save for Misku stays alive. I think Sir's alive, Aki's alive, and I can't remember the fourth girl's name. But they all end up, Kyoko, I think maybe it was.
Yeah, I wanna... It could be. I'm going to
look it up. No, Kyoko was the bride character that we'll get to in just a little bit. She wasn't one of the friends. She was
Izumi, maybe?
No, Izumi. Izumi was the runner. By the time
it's been too long, I don't have all the names. So Aki Taeko, we have here.
Maybe that was the Taeko fourth or Taeko. Of the girls. So now the girls are trying to survive, and like you said, it's just a massacre. These teachers have, you know, grenade launchers, assault rifles, like you said, Uzis. You name it, they look like mercenaries going to war. They're just covered in guns. There's just guns everywhere. And this is where the effects I don't think were as good, where they used the CGI for the school massacre. So they the girls end up running, and that turns out to be a big theme. Actually, the one teacher had a big like a chain gun, like that you hold with two hands, almost like a Gatling gun. And she's just mowing all these students down. they get outside and they take off running, and the whole time there's like explosions and all these other girls getting killed next to them. She loses a couple of the girls on the way. She ends up losing almost all of them, but this is where Aki starts to tell her, like, you have to just keep running. Like, I think she tells her, or no, that was in the race, but she keeps giving her little hints that she knows something is going on. So we now
but she
know.
Dies as well then at some point, like Aki as well, and then it's only Mitsuko all on her own, running, and then and then she meets up with her friends again.
She runs into the no, the race doesn't happen yet. That's at the end. This time she runs into the police station, and the cop is like, "What's wrong with you? What's wrong?" And then all of a sudden the cop's out of nowhere. She's like, "Oh, Kyoko, you're so silly. Why are you dressed like a schoolgirl? You're 25 years old." And so now Mitsuko's like, what the fuck is going on? And she can't understand, and she's hearing screams and stuff in her head, but as she's looking around, the landscape is normal. There's just people out shopping, doing their thing. And then she looks in a mirror, sees a completely different face, and then all of a sudden now she's got a different face. And she's Kyoko now. And this might have been one of my favorite parts of the movie. So she's like, it's time for the reception, Kyoko. We got to go. Get in the car. And there's people outside banging on the car, but they're like, yay, yay. And she takes her to the a church, and they're like, oh, you got to get changed. It's time for the wedding. And and this is where I was really thinking, okay, we're doing something cool in alternate realities and a multiverse type world. And so Kyoko gets changed. Aki is back. Aki just shows up and starts telling her, just do what I tell you. Don't worry about it. I'll take care of you. Just do what I tell you. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. They get her in the wedding dress. And again, out of nowhere, Aki just starts breaking people's arms, snapping their necks. She's just wandering around, like, murdering everyone. And she's doing her thing. And she smashes a bottle in half and gives it to Mitsuko, who's now Kyoko, and she's carrying it like a bride would carry like a bouquet of flowers walking down the aisle. We get down the aisle, and this is weird as shit. Like, there's a big black coffin at the end of the aisle, and she goes up to it. They're like, hey, here's your bridegroom, and you've just got a man pig.
I don't even know what to say. I thought this was so crazy, and at that point I still had no idea at all what's going on, what's happening. Like something with multiverses. Okay, something with alternate realities. Yeah, but I had no idea.
No. And it gets even weirder because now the two teachers are back, but they look like almost out of the Matrix. Like they're all dressed in black and all a little bit militant. And now we get into kung fu fighting. I can't remember if this was when all the women started ripping their clothes off and were just in their bra and underwear.
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. All the people in the church, all the women, I think at one point they're like calling her a slut, and they all start taking their outer garments off and are just standing around in their bra and underwear, and the pig guy's he's like shaking and making these pig noises at the whole time. So now Mitsuku or Kyoko and Aki have to fight their way out of this this weird wedding, this super weird wedding. And so they're stabbing people along the way, and they take off running. I can't remember if Aki dies again, but they take off.
I think so. At least she gets to the next stage alone. Like there's no one with her anymore. She's
right.
So I think Aki dies as well again.
So Aki's dead. She takes off and gets away, and Aki tells her something along the lines of like, only you can fix this. You got to think about it. Like think, just keep thinking. So she takes off and she's running, and then all of a sudden now she's running in a race in her wedding dress. Again, I'm thinking alternate realities. This could be super cool. And there's other people running with her who start telling her, like, oh, you've been running. We've been running together always since we were kids, and we always ran together. You were the fastest. And now
isn't there even a flashback to when she ran as a kid?
Yeah, there's a flashback to them running at school when they were schoolgirls, and she ends up running by a mirror. She looks into the mirror, and now she's Izumi. So we've gone from Mitsuku, even though in her head she knows she's Mitsuku. She understands that, but everyone around her, it's the realities around her that are changing, and her appearance changes. She's called a new name, so now she's Izumi, and they're running what looks like a marathon, some sort of a long race. They all have the numbers, the number cards, tape, clothespin and to them, or pinned to them.
She even like working on breaking some record or something? Like, isn't that like they say, you got to keep running, you're going to make it. The others are just like helping her, but she's the runner in the group. Like she's right. the main
Well, they all had numbers on her, but they all had numbers on them, and it seemed like they were all running the race together, but they keep reinforcing this idea that she was always the fastest.
Yeah, that she's the best, that she got to keep running, that they're just there to help her, they're for her.
Right. And they keep telling her, you know, and now the girls start to change as well into the alternate realities, who all start off as kind of these adult characters, and their appearances start to change. And then before too long, here come the Matrix teachers running up behind them, and the pig bridegroom also running, which I thought that shot was awesome. They just kept like jumping and kicking people. All these other runners, they're punching them, kicking them, and these runners are just falling behind. And they keep telling Izumi at this point, they're like, you have to keep running. You have to keep running. You're the only one who can do this. And then Aki tells her, go over the fence. Like, that's how you can get out of this. Go over the fence so they don't make it to the finish line. She jumps over the fence, takes off, and now she's kind of left behind the other two and the pig, the bridegroom. But that scene was really fun. I really enjoyed that when they just kept jump kicking people over the, and then they just kept running and chasing. So this entire time, she's not only trying to figure out these alternate realities, she's being pursued by unseen forces.
She got to figure out what's happening, where she is, who she is, with whom she is. And then she's also always got to run for her life because there's always someone coming to kill her. Or trying at least. Or kind of, it never felt like she was in any danger, right? It always felt like she's the one, everyone else around her is dying, but she never really has the danger. She never really had to die up until this point. Or like in the very beginning, I even felt like she was surviving not by accident, but actually on purpose. Like that thing didn't want her to die. And so after a while, it felt like she's always there everyone around her is dying, but she's kind of not in any danger so far.
Right. Yeah, the danger was all around her. You are correct in that. But she, I think she was struggling more mentally than she was physically, trying to figure out what was going on and why all this stuff was happening to her. She runs away again. She stays Azumi for a while, and then she sees, did she end up in the cave first or in the future? I can't remember.
I think first in the cave, and then she meets all these people.
Yeah. Well, she meets up with... No, I think she was in the future, because then she goes to the cave. Because there's only those quick couple of minutes in the future where she sees a poster on the wall with her face, Kyoko's face, and Zumi's face all next to each other. And it's like, oh, the game, now in 3D or whatever.
Yeah, it's the poster. I think she sees the poster for the movie.
Yeah, because there's weird guys sitting there staring at it. I'm pretty sure the one might have been jerking off. I don't know 100%, but... And then this strange man shows up and talks to her for a minute, and then he's gone. She ends up in the cave where she's now having the conversation with Aki.
One more thing. There's also... this is also in that scene, I think, the other girls in, like, glass tubes. Like, her... I think it was her old bodies, but I'm not sure anymore.
No, that's not till she gets to the very end.
Is that? Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah.
It's been a while since I've seen it, and this movie is very confusing.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. It is easy to get. I got out my notebook when I was watching it because I was like, I know there's some shit I'm gonna forget. So I've been going through the my notes.
Okay, good.
This whole time, and she does end up in this cave. And I don't know, I think the future could have been before or after, but I don't think it really would have had a lot of impact on how you see the story and how it plays out. But she does see this future where she sees herself on the wall, and now she's even more confused. And the strange man does come up, has a few words with her, and then he's gone. She takes off again, and now she's in a cave with Aki. But now she's back to being Mitsuku. And Aki keeps telling her, and behind her is this what looks like an army of just dead bodies standing up, upright. Yeah. And Aki tells her, like, you have to, she keeps telling her, you have to say, I'm Mitsuku, I am Mitsuku. And then you have to pull these threads out of me. And she's got you're right. She was at the cave first, because after she pulls the threads out of a key, she walks through the light door and then ends up in the future place.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I thought. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So Aki's got these red and blue threads under her skin hanging out of her wrist. And she keeps telling Mitsuku that you have to pull these threads. You have to kill me. And this is where I was like, okay, this is a really cool multiverse alternate reality idea, because I thought that was going to be symbolic of there are these threads that move through all of the universes, and it depends on which one you're following or which one you're tugging on, you know, will play into which universe you're in. I was like, that's a neat idea, but turns out I was wrong. But it was cool when she pulled the threads and Aki's just getting yanked apart, you know, like it's ripping her arms open. There's blood spraying everywhere, fountains of blood. So she pulls all these, goes through this door, light door. I hope I'm remembering this right. She goes through the light door, and then ends up in this future place, then goes back through some other doors, and she runs by all the bodies in the cave, and now she's in some sort of almost an underground, like a, I don't want to say like, it was a cave system of some sort, and you just see that there are people standing in the walls. There's these cutouts in the walls, and you just see kind of the legs, like from the waist down, and she keeps following this cave system. And this is where the movie took a huge shit for me, and I was not happy about it. She stumbles upon a guy, this very old man, playing a game, and on the screen she can see everything that she had already gone through. She saw the shooting at the school. She saw them down by the river. And I guess we should have mentioned that feathers keep showing up throughout this, even though I don't know. I honestly don't know. But she sees the pillow fights that they've had, and then the old man turns around and starts to have a conversation with her, and this is where the glass tube with the bodies.
With the other girls, yeah.
Yeah, so he tells her that he took her DNA some, and am I? I don't understand if I'm to believe this guy's 150 years old. Because he makes the comment about I've been waiting to like fulfill this fantasy or whatever for 150 years, but we're led to believe that he took her DNA, and this is essentially the next level of gaming. So her DNA, she's nothing but a character in the game, and I want to say, and he says, well, I took the DNA of your friends at the same time. So in the game, I don't know if they're all DNA characters or only those core characters were DNA and had a sort of consciousness. And so he's been playing this game the whole time with her and her friends, which makes sense if you look at how it played out. A lot of games that we play today, video games, play out in some of these same ways. You're always racing away from something. There's always some threat that's trying to prevent you from reaching your goal. Now, I don't know how she went from in the game to being able to stand in front of the creator of the game. That was all a little bit confusing to me. But at its core, she's been in this game. And then I think he used his own DNA and created a younger version of himself who he wants to now watch have sex with Misku. So there's this bed there, and he's like, hey, get in the bed. Just do what you're told. And the young version of this gamer guy, but he's like, I've been waiting to fulfill this fantasy for 150 years. So I don't know if we're supposed to believe that he's 150 years old. I don't know. I just didn't like it. I didn't like it at all. I thought the ending was just shit because it felt, I don't want to say cheap, but at the same time, it was like, it felt so out of place. I don't know. Maybe you can shed some light on it for me, or if you've got any insights, I don't know, man.
Actually, I really can't.
Just what was your interpretation? Did you even like the way it ended?
I can't honestly say. I was just so confused by everything that happened so far that I'm still not fully sure. And also, I watched a German dub and. Now, when you're talking about it, I feel like the German dub changed something up because I had something in my head that he didn't talk about the game at all, but maybe I'm just misremembering. But I just looked it up again. And yeah, I had an idea that maybe this was also, even though he says it's a game and everything, that it's... a commentary on movies and what the typical, like, look at what you're watching because you're watching this movie and then it turns out that character is real, but you're watching these kind of movies for enjoyment. You know, that kind of thing that maybe he tried to make some sort of commentary there. That's what I got out of it. And
yeah, I don't see that at all. And maybe there was something in the German dub that
maybe.
Because he was very, like, I felt that was the only part that was clear in all of it. He's like, I used your DNA, I took the DNA from you and your friends, and we made a game out of it. And we've been playing said game, and I've been waiting forever to have sex with you, but I'm going to let my younger self do it. And then he's just standing in the corner watching with his cane, like, shaking around. But the... It was... Like, in a way, she was breaking free from the controls of this system that she was a part of, because when she starts fighting back against him when they're in the bed together, he's like, no, what's happening? What's happening? The pillow again, the feathers flying everywhere, and then all the feathers start turning red. Everything starts turning red. And then she goes back in her mind. I don't know if it's in her mind or in some other reality, but all three of the characters... Mitsuku, Kyoko, and Izumi all kill themselves as opposed to going on. So she on the bus lets herself get killed. No, she stabs herself.
Yeah, she with the pen that she picked up. Yeah.
Yeah. She stabs herself with the pen. Kyoko stabs herself with the bottle. That bottle, then...
Doesn't she cut open her stomach with the bottle? Or do I misremember that?
No, I think she just shoves it into her stomach. Or into Yeah. Okay, she does. Yeah. She does impale herself with the glass bottle, the wine bottle, or whatever it was. And then Izumi, I don't think we see how Izumi dies. She's just laying on the ground in her racing clothes.
Yeah, I don't remember either.
Yeah. So I don't know if at some point, like, this was her character breaking free from the confines of the game and saying, I won't be a part of your game anymore, and then killing herself. But again, it's super confusing. Super confusing, and I don't know if there was supposed to be any commentary there. To me, I just wish they would have stuck with the idea of the alternate realities, because I thought that was really cool. I thought they were going to go somewhere with that. But it turns out, you know, maybe each part of the game, and as I'm talking about this, maybe I actually do like it a little bit more as I'm trying to actually work my way through it. Whereas with each character, it was like a different level of the game. But why did he use her DNA for all of them? Because he had the molds for, he had the mold of Mitsuku and Kyoko and Izumi. They were in like a weird glass case. Almost there was all kinds of plants in there alive with them. Almost something like a greenhouse, or a tiny little self-contained environment where he had all these bodies. But then were the bodies a second chance? I don't know. I don't know, man.
Yeah, I really. There was something off, but I still, after all, I really just enjoyed the movie and thought it was so crazy and so fucked up that it's just lots of fun, even though the ending is kind of weird, but also maybe because the ending is so weird and so out of, I don't know, just so
I did enjoy the movie. There was a lot that I really liked about it, and I specifically avoided going to Wikipedia or reading any fan theories, because when you and I talked about it, I wanted to just be able to say, this is what I thought, without digging too deep. But now that we've had the conversation, I will probably try and dig a little bit to see if I can find a better explanation of exactly what the ending meant, because there's just a lot of weird going on.
But we were both probably expecting a lot of weird from the director already, because We haven't talked much about Suicide Circle, but it's very similar, right? In lots of ways. Like there's also, I think Suicide Circle does even less explanation than this one. Like this has a scene at the end where at least there's someone explaining what happened. In Suicide Circle,
is your version called Suicide Circle?
Oh yeah, here it's Suicide Circle.
Oh
yeah,
okay, got it.
In English, it's Suicide Club, right?
Yeah.
Which is a way better title, but yeah. In Suicide Club, they don't explain anything at all. It just kind of ends after being this mystery. It's almost like Seven or something, where they try to solve this mystery about why people keep killing themselves. And we get thousands of leads, but basically, I think the answer in the end, I think I can spoil this because it's not really a spoiler. The answer in the end is that there is no answer.
Right.
And that it's all a big coincidence, I think. And it's really, people should see Suicide Club. I think Suicide Club is still better than Tag.
Yeah, I think they're both very unique in their own right. And Suicide Club was, I think, crazier, which is weird to say after explaining what we just explained about this movie. But Suicide Club is just crazy because it was almost like The Happening, the M. Night Shyamalan movie, where you don't really understand for the longest time what's going on, and all these people just keep killing themselves all over the place. And you're right. Like you said, you never really get a good answer. And with Tag, yes, we got some answer, but I think the answer, all it did was raise more questions than it actually gave answers. You know, the answer just makes you want to dig a little bit deeper and question more. But as a whole, I really enjoyed this movie. I thought it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's just a good time. And I like the title is that it's a splatter teenage. No, now I forgot how it's exactly phrased. It's kind of like a high school splatter film. That's the tagline of the movie on the German DVD. And I just like that title a lot, a high school splatter film. And that's what it is in the end. It's just lots of blood splattering around. And
but again, I wouldn't call it a horror movie, because I don't think there was, I mean, especially when I put these two movies side by side, when you put them next to each other. And, you know, I was thinking about these when I was taking notes last night, when you put them side by side. And I've said it on this podcast. I've said it on Those Movie Guys, even when you were doing Film House. Your definition of horror and my definition of horror are two very, very different things. I feel like you could make almost anything a horror movie. You'd be like, oh, but yeah, this was a little bit scary. That could be scary, right? But as a whole, if somebody asked me, is this a horror movie, I would never say yes. I would, you know, because there's so many other, like you and I both just watched Polar, which is super graphic and super violent, which I think the violence in this was along the same lines for the most part. You know, you talk about all them girls getting cut in half. When Mads Mikkelsen has the finger guns, you're just watching people get murdered into pieces. And I did like the one of the teachers, though, stepped on that girl's face during the race and just smashed it into nothing. But I don't necessarily think blood and violence make a horror movie. You know, you think about even Tarantino stuff. Like, would you call Pulp Fiction horror?
No, but I think what also goes into making Tag a horror for me is also not only is it gory, it's also very, well, of course, with the ending, we're getting a bit more sci-fi, but for the most part, it's almost supernatural, like with this wind just killing people. You could make a whole low-budget horror movie about wind killing people.
Yeah, but the wind only lasted for the first couple of minutes, and the wind never comes back.
But then we get the pig face man. That's almost We get lots of these. Almost like if you don't see the ending, it's mostly supernatural stuff. Like you don't know what's going on, and just because in the end it says, "Oh, it's all computer animated," doesn't mean that it's suddenly a sci-fi movie and not a horror movie anymore. But like if at the ending he said, "I'm a magician," and would it then be more horror than sci-fi?
But I think because the action sequences outweigh the supernatural sequences by so much is a reason I wouldn't call it a horror movie. Because even though there were the couple of horror elements, it was the action and the sci-fi were 90% and the horror was 10%. So it's so much more, I think, one movie than it is the other. But now, the pig face man, yes, that I think was more horror for sure. It was like a Motel Hell when Farmer Vincent's running around with the pig head on with the chainsaw. Yeah. But I think that, yes, that makes it a little bit more horror, but at the end, I still wouldn't call it a horror movie. I would never present it to another person as a horror movie. Because I feel
official,
like they would be.
Official website says horror.
What official website? But it said it.
Well, IMDb.
It said it after action, fantasy, then horror.
Well, IMDb sorts by alphabetical. So action.
You're crazy.
Fantasy. No, that's true.
No, I believe you. I'm still saying you're crazy. You should go work for IMDb. But see, when I first opened up on my phone, it just says fantasy/mystery.
Yeah, because there's not enough room for all three, maybe.
But no, this isn't an IMDb. When you just Google it, like right here, the first thing that pops up, fantasy mystery. So that's how they want people to know this, at least. And I know we'll keep. So the Wikipedia says suspense, action, horror, art film.
But I just entered Tag 2015 genre. And then it starts listing the genres. It says here in German, but they're listed horror film, action film, thriller, Japanese horror. So we got horror twice in that list. I can show it to you as well.
So maybe nobody knows what it is. It's just fucking crazy.
Okay, we should go into our next movie because we prepared another movie. And I'm really excited to talk about this one as well.
Okay, and I'll let you kind of take the lead on this one because I know I kind of talked a lot about the last one. So this is one I've been trying to get you to watch for how long now? Probably 6 months. Been trying to get you
for a long time, and yeah, it was always hard to get. And I gotta say, I actually watched. It's really shitty because I watched the cut version of the movie, but after I rented it on Amazon, I found out that there's also the complete movie uncut on YouTube right now.
Oh, nice.
So, but instead of, like, I didn't want to then watch it on YouTube because I already paid for it. I'm just going to watch it there. But I looked up the scenes. I had another website where they show what scenes are cut out. And then I looked them just up when they were happening on the YouTube video.
Oh, nice. Nice.
And so I got the whole scenes. And so this movie we're gonna just go through it as well, because it's not as long. There's not as much crazy shit happening,
right?
As much confusing shit, crazy shit. There is more crazy. Let's start with these two girls.
We're talking about Terrifier, just as a reminder.
Yeah, Terrifier, and we're gonna spoil it as well. But this is one I think as well. Can you really spoil it, or is it more of a experience?
I think even if you told somebody the entire story, you could still watch it and be taken aback by some of the things that happen. And it is on Netflix in the States. So if you are one of our stateside listeners, it is available on Netflix right now over here.
Yeah. Okay, so we start off with a girl being interviewed about something that happened a year ago. And this girl has a crazy disfigured face.
Really fucked up.
Yeah,
really. She looked like the guy from Hannibal. The movie.
Yes.
The movie Hannibal. Yeah. When Lecter had cut all his face off and shit, gave him all the drugs and made him cut his own face off.
Yeah, and that actually makes sense because...
same thing. Kind of the same thing.
And so, this girl is interviewed about something that happened with this evil clown a year ago. And she says, but no, he's dead. We know he's dead now. And then she kills the journalist who interviewed her.
Right.
And cut to two girls, Tara and Dawn, I think, are the two girls. They're out after a party. They're drunk.
Halloween. We are on. Yeah, it is Halloween night.
It is Halloween night. Yeah, they just came from a hot party. And they're standing at the car, but of course, like, Dawn wants to drive. Tara says no. Then Terrifier shows up, this clown. We see beforehand, we see a little bit of how he makes himself up, which I think is really, really cool thing to add, because he's not just this evil clown, like with It, where he just looks like that. No, he actually made himself up. Like, he's sitting down and putting makeup on. And they see this evil clown, Terrifier, which
Art.
I still think is
Art the Clown.
Art the Clown, yeah true. I always have them connected.
That's
in my
all right.
Head,
so yeah, that's all right.
And we just can say right now that Art the Clown he looks amazing.
Oh, the visual of Art is just so spot on.
Yeah.
So
and the whole black and white, the theme, the look of his. Also, he has, even though the actor changed through the movies, he has this face that looks very, I don't know how to say it, but he has this certain face, right? That
we see him put on the fake nose, and you see that he's using some prosthetic type stuff to change his appearance. But he does have a very unique look. And I think with the black and white, that plays into him being a mime for the most part. He never makes any sounds. Even when he's experiencing great pain, he never makes a sound. So he's a clown and a mime at the same time, which I think plays really well, because he uses the mime aspect to be very kind of eccentric and over the top.
And in this movie, they didn't have him before, but in this movie, the actor David Howard David Howard Thornton, he's actually a trained mime. So
okay, perfect.
He plays it perfectly. And so they see him, they make a bit of fun of him. Like, Dawn, of course, is drunk and says like, "Oh, he should be your boyfriend," and makes fun of Tara. Then they go sit down and try to plan how to get home. Sit down in a
pizzeria.
And soon after, Art the Clown comes back in, sits down across from them, makes some. I posted a GIF on our Twitter for anyone who doesn't follow us on Twitter. I even posted a GIF of him doing the move where he puts his head on his hands. He does these great moves, and then Dawn goes up to him, takes some pictures with him, makes fun of him. And then he gives Tara a ring.
Right. But at
really
first,
romantic.
He's just staring at her, which is really uncomfortable, the way he just stares and stares. But then, he goes over to a little, like one of those small, you see him in restaurants all the time. I don't want to call it a vending machine, but it's because it's not. But you put a couple quarters in, turn the thing, and a little prize will come out the bottom. And he gets a ring and then goes over and essentially proposes to Tara's. Yeah, Tara's. He proposed to Tara.
Yeah,
and
not to
she's really creeped out by it. Dawn doesn't seem to be bothered that much because it's Halloween. She's, like you said, she's kind of drunk. She's like, whatever, we'll just... they had gone to the pizza place originally just to get some food in them so that they would sober up a little bit was the goal. Yeah. And then Art goes into the bathroom.
Yeah, but they leave before he comes back out, right? They don't...
No, they're still there because the guy throws him out.
He throws him out. Yeah, he throws Art out. Then they leave, and then we see a bit later the aftermath that I think he wrote like Art...
Yeah, he had wrote Art on the wall with his own shit.
Which is, something people do.
Right. It's a good way to do graffiti with your own feces. Yeah.
They get back to the car, sit down, and call Tara's sister to come
because
pick them up.
The tire had been slashed.
Oh, right. Exactly. I totally forgot that. Yeah, the tires had been slashed.
And she tells
so
her that
drive.
She didn't have a spare, that the spare was already on the car. And so, Tara calls her sister and says, hey, can you come pick us up? It's we're over by here or there, yada, yada. And so now they're just sitting in the car waiting for Tara's sister. And that's when Tara has to take a piss.
Yeah, she has to go to the toilet. She goes into this abandoned house that's being cleaned right now of, I think, rats.
Yeah,
I think
it's being exterminated. They see the exterminator outside smoking. And she's like, hey, just go ask that guy if you can use the bathroom.
Yeah, exactly. And so she goes in, is shown around shortly, goes to the bathroom. And that is intercut with Art killing the owners of the pizzeria. And shortly after, Dawn actually hears on the radio that this clown killed these guys in the pizzeria where they just came from. And... Then Tara also finds a whole stack of tires.
Yeah.
And meets this kind of crazy lady with a puppet baby. And and then Dawn is in the car and is, I think that's when she just heard that the clown is there. Then someone gets into her car. She looks to the side and Art the clown is sitting there staring at her. And we cut to Tara a bit later coming back out, I think. Not finding Tara. And then Art is there following her.
Right.
She flees back inside and tries to find help. But in the end, Art captures her. Does he drag her there? No, that's later. No, that's there, right? He gets her in the end, and then
she's tied to the chair, and Tara is now inside with them.
Yeah, well, at first she's just tied to the chair, and she's in this room with just Art the clown, and then Art turns around, and there's this carpet hanging from the wall, and he just pulls it down, and it's her friend. Completely naked, just in her panties, upside down, tied to the walls.
Yeah, she's hung from the ceiling, and the same way you would hang a deer that you were getting ready to gut. I don't know if you guys hunted all over there, stuff like that, but for anyone who's ever done any hunting, the same way you would hang a deer from the ceiling by its legs. He's got Dawn hung up from the ceiling, like you said, naked, and he's still though. What makes this movie so great, and what I think what makes Art such a good slasher, is the weird eccentric nature where he's like, he pulls the carpet down, and he almost does this Vanna White like ta-da, like she's his assistant and he's about to do a show, and he's very excited about it, and so he does this big reveal of the woman hanging by her.
Yeah, he's one of the few slashers that actually, like, he has a personality in a way. Even though he doesn't talk, he is, I think, the closest to Freddy Krueger from the slashers that we get. Because Michael and Jason, they're all just silent, but Terrifier Art is having fun, making jokes, being happy, like Freddy would do. Like he would talk shit to the people. And of course, Art does it with his miming.
Right.
Also, like he then pulls off her panties in a very artsy way. Like he's presenting what he's doing now.
Yeah.
And then now I'm going to tell you what I saw in the version I watched. He then goes down, gets this saw.
A handsaw.
A handsaw, yeah. Puts it close to her leg, between her legs. And then we cut to Tara freeing herself. And Art runs after her. So it's
okay.
Pretty much like nothing happened. Later on in the scene, we actually get an aftermath. But like the scene is cut, it looked like he was about to do it, but then Tara got free. No.
In the full version, we see him cut her in half. And he's like smiling and laughing, and there's blood spraying all over his face.
I've never seen so much joy in a face in my life when he's done cutting her down. And guts start falling to the floor, and he's cutting. The only thing that kind of, I think it makes sense, but it also made me kind of frustrated, is that he didn't get all the way through. There's still, she's always hung together. It looks awesome. Like, awesome is probably the wrong word.
But at the same time, you're right. I mean, visually, I loved all the practical effects they used in this movie. Yes. Everything was practically done. If there was CGI, it was very, very minimal. And some of that could have just been the budget of the movie. Maybe they knew, which I think was smart. Like, we don't have enough money to do really good CGI. And I hope to think, though, that a lot of it was, because I think the director worked in effects before.
I think so too.
Yeah, before directing. And so he's had that love for it, and they absolutely did it right. But yeah, when he's cutting her in half and Art's just doing that silent laugh throughout and these huge smiles on his face with his really disgusting teeth in his head. But he's just, sawing her in half the whole time. Like, and he's sawing fast too. Like, he's really working on it. He's going at it. And cuts her in half. And I know this is really, really terrible, but I told Shayna this even when we were when we had watched it the first time together. I'd seen it and then watched it with her. I said, hey, if you're going to cut someone in half, a woman in half, that's a good place to start, because it lines up perfectly. It's almost like a miter box where you have a
That's what I was thinking as well.
Like, right? You have a perfect place to start where it's like, okay, saw goes right here. It's already lined up, and now I'll just start sawing in half. But Tara ends up at this point getting herself free from the chair, and now we get into this cat and mouse game with her and Art.
First of all, she beats him up.
Like, yeah.
She hits him with the part of the chair. Then she hits him some more, I think, and even gets some other weapons. Like, she actually hurts him. And that's what I also like, is that every now and then Art is really almost defeated.
Right.
But then...
She does, though, and we talk about this in horror movies, and we could say, you know, why did she just stand there and wait for him to come at her again? Because she's just standing there with the big 2x4, like, come on, motherfucker, whatever she says, where she should have just kept beating the entire time and relentlessly just beat this guy. But she gives him a small window, and Art, though, I like this scene in particular because we learn really quickly that he doesn't play fair at all. He pulls a gun out of his boot, shoots her in the leg, and knocks her down.
That's also something we don't really get in these kind of movies usually. In these kind of slasher movies, the killer doesn't use a gun. Art, he just pulls a gun and shoots her, and then it's almost like a reverse. Usually we learned that in Scream, and then later as well in Zombieland, you always do the double tap. That's what Art does. Like, she lays on the floor and he shoots her, I think, first to the legs, so she falls down.
Yeah.
Then into the body a bit. Then he shoots her in the head. She's dead. She's laying there dead.
He shoots her a lot in the face. Like,
that's what I was going to say. He first shoots her once. She lays there dead. And then we cut back to him and he's boom, boom, boom. Just like 5 or 6 more times in the face. You can't recognize her at all anymore.
Yeah, it turns her face into hamburger. Like, it really is. And then we get her sister finally shows up.
Yeah. And that's what I also thought. Like, her sister writes a text to Dawn. I'm there because, of course, Tara's phone went out. So she writes to Dawn. I'm here now. Where are you? And then Art takes Dawn's phone and answers. Tara's not feeling well. She's in the back. Come over there.
Right.
And then just imagining Art the Cloud, that guy, that big guy that doesn't speak that looks terrifying. I just killed two people sitting down and writing this text on a phone. I just thought, and then he also takes a selfie with Thor.
Right, right.
Like mirroring what she did earlier. Like, this is some great filmmaking we get mirroring.
Yeah.
Yeah, he takes a selfie with the dead body. Then we go on, like, Victoria is the sister's name. She takes a long time to get in.
Yeah, it takes her a while to figure out how to get into the building and where she needs to go.
And in the meantime, the cat lady, that's her official name, she first she goes to Mike the exterminator.
Right.
Because she saw Art but couldn't do anything. She goes to Mike and says, "Hey, call the police, we need to stop him." But Mike doesn't listen, thinks she's crazy, because she probably is. But in this case, she was saying the truth.
Right.
And then Mike is basically just struck down with a hammer, I think.
Yeah, he gets him. Well, Mike does send a message or leaves a voicemail with his counterpart.
Yeah, with his coworker, right?
Yeah. He's like, you gotta, I think this is the point, yeah, where he leaves a message and says, "Hey, I need you to come here," or whatever, like something's going on and something's not right.
Yeah, and then Art strikes him down, kills him, and sits down and just beats in on the phone.
Bit, right.
Which also, it just, he looked like a little child in that scene when he
yeah.
And then the cat lady, I don't know how she lost her kid, but she lost her kid.
And again, the kid is a doll. The a kid doll, is a yeah. doll.
And then she's looking for it, and she sees Art sitting there on like some big dark hallway, holding the baby and like cradling it. And she goes to him, and we have this sincere moment of this crazy cat lady telling Art the clown that the baby is the only thing she has, and if he ever felt love, she sits down, takes him in her arm, and pets him, and he cuddles up to her. It feels really romantic. And then we cut to Tara walking around, still looking. And after a while, first she finds Dawn. She right. finds Dawn's body, freaks out, of course, looks around, tries to find her sister, of course, because I think, no, she thinks it's a prank before that happened. After that, she knows it's real, right? And she walks around some more. And then she finds this woman on the ground. I'm not sure if she thinks it's her sister, because it's the same kind of hair color. She's laying on the ground, and we hear the oh god, that scene. We hear the someone crying, "Help me!" and looking up, and Victoria tries to call the police, I think, and then she sees the crazy cat lady on the ground with an open chest and having the scalp removed,
yeah,
brain looking out, and in the same, and she goes, "Help me!" And the same second, Art, who was laying on the floor with her head on and her chest on, jumps up and grabs her and starts to follow her, and that's probably one of the most terrifying things I've seen. Is Art the clown with the female hair, and now we see the whole time he looked very hulking and menacing, but then you see he's actually a very small, like not small, he's really
he's
tall,
thin, yeah, he's tall,
very
and thin.
And then of course he got the female chest put on his own,
yeah,
and is running around like a girl, but also kind of like how a mime would play a woman, I think.
That's, and he takes on the role of, you know, you almost get this feminine element about, he's very like dainty almost. Like he's got his arms up to the side and he's like running around, like he's touching himself.
He's not running around like a normal woman, but like how a mime would play a woman.
Right.
Like really over the top. And like if you took all the features that make a woman, how a woman walks, he just takes them over the top. And it looked so fucking creepy. Like, that's probably one of the creepiest things I've seen. Like, if I had watched this last year, I said the whole time the creepiest scene in movies all year was, for me, the dog, bear,
Annihilation. Yeah.
But I think Terrifier in the female makeup would also be very close to my number one.
Well, 100% agree.
That's like one of the most fucked up scenes I've ever seen.
When she's peeking at him, because she's hiding in that cupboard or whatever, that big cabinet that she was hiding in, and she was looking out through the little hole. When she's peeking out at him, and he's like got his arms out and he's like tossing the hair back to the sides and like really just kind of in his own world, almost like you said, almost like he's playing this fucked up game where he's like, oh, now I'm this, so I'm just gonna do this and wander around and be super creepy. But you're right, of all the scenes in this movie, that one is the most terrifying because it's so uncomfortable to watch. You just know that this guy truly is psychotic in every way possible. Like he's just nuts. But it also played so well. Like it was just the look, the aesthetic of that, of him wearing I guess you'd call it a chest plate of this woman, and he's got the, like you said, the scalp that he's now wearing, this woman's long dark hair. But him dancing around like that is creepy. And I think she got away from him because she had stabbed him in the foot, and that's another part where you can see him screaming out in pain, but he doesn't make any noises, which I like so much.
He's screaming. It looks like he's really screaming, like almost like they just took away the sound.
Yeah, like but you actually scream and then cut the audio.
Yeah, but I think I would almost say that for this acting alone, I'm gonna follow what David Howard Thomas does because he really became this.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like a human playing. Like Freddy Krueger looked always like Robert Englund playing this weird guy. But this doesn't look human at all. But it's a human with some prosthetics.
Yeah.
But it there feels nothing human about this character.
And he does it, you're right. He does it so well in all these, and he brings so much life to the character of Art.
Yeah.
Like you can see so much personality. Like you said, there's so much personality in this character, even though he is a deranged maniac of a killer, you can still see so much life. And where was I going with that? Now I can't even remember what I was going to say. It'll come back to me. So she is, now I'm trying to remember where we go from here.
Well,
it's been a couple,
well,
3 weeks
is,
since I
she
watched
She is
it.
In the, yeah, I can go on. I
yeah,
I
yeah, please do.
She is in the cupboard. He's actually, he knows she's there. Like we get from the cuts how it's cut, he knows exactly where she is. And then he walks just out of view where she can't see him and then jump scares right in front of the hole.
Yes, that's right.
And then
right.
Before he can attack her, outside Mike's colleague shows up. And we saw him before that he was there and tried calling Mike, couldn't reach him. And he starts pressing the horn of his car. And so right before Art can go in, he looks over and goes outside because he wants to see where the sound has come from. That's also something we get all the time in this movie is Art being like almost like a cat. Like he's walking up to something and then I think at least twice Terra throws something in another corner and he's like... And
yeah.
Then walks over there. We get it a few times. And and we get it here. He then goes to look for the guy pressing the horn. And that's also a scene that was basically completely cut out of the movie because of my version. Because I watched it, he, the second exterminator finds a way in. He finds a key, right? He was about to leave. He was about to drive off and then finds a key. So he goes in. And then we get this kind of horror scenario, him walking around and some scary things happen, the usual stuff. But then Art shows up and in my version, we see he strikes him down and then we see that he puts a knife on his neck and then we see blood flowing and then Art leaves again.
And oh no!
What I then found out when I watched the full version is that he not only cuts open his throat, no, he actually cuts off his own head.
Yeah,
and throws it, and I think just looks at it for a bit, before throwing it away.
Yeah, it cuts the head all the way off.
And that effect was also really, really well done. Like
all the effects in this movie, yeah. All the effects were...
That fake head looked realistic. Like, often we get these scenes where then as soon as the head comes off, it looks like a doll head or like a puppet head. But this looked like his actual head.
Yeah.
And that's really, really good.
And now we get to probably my favorite scene in the whole movie. And I don't know why it's my favorite scene in the whole movie, but it makes me laugh every time when Art's riding around on that tricycle.
I looked for a GIF of that scene afterwards, but couldn't find one. There's not a GIF out there yet of Art on the tricycle, just riding around in circles.
He looks so happy. He's like, honk, honk, hitting the little horn, and he's just... Yeah, because, I mean, it's something you would expect to see at the circus, you know, a huge man on a tiny little tricycle.
Yeah, and a few days before that, I actually watched, I watched all the Scary Movie movies, at least 1, 2, 4. And in the fourth one, we get, it's the Saw parody. And
you get Billy?
Yeah, and we get the Saw puppet riding outside as well on a tricycle when he comes out, and that just reminded me of that again, and then that's even funnier to me. Because now I imagine like this big giant hulking clown on this bicycle.
But the tricycle scene is amazing. It really is. That scene alone is worth watching this movie. It's so funny. It's so funny,
especially
and so
in
weird.
The context. Like I think just watching that scene is already funny. Like it looks funny already because of how he moves. But then seeing it in context of the movie is just perfect. And now you got to help me because we're now at the end, and I'm not right sure how it happened again.
Can't remember how she ended up in the garage without him, but he ends up driving the truck through the garage door.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think it was the other exterminator guy was the one who had called the cops. Was he the one who had called the cops? But we know the cops are on their way. They've been notified. She ends up in the garage with Art outside. And Art ends up driving the truck through the garage door, which makes for another great comedic moment when he's in there listening to the music, snapping his fingers. He's just like, he's really into it. He's enjoying it, this music that's on the radio. And now we have this final standoff between these two characters, because she's just kind of waiting for help to show up, but Art ends up finding a way in, and now we get the last fight between these two, which ends with her, which I love. So the cops end up getting in when Art's over top of her, and we know that Art's been mutilating her. And we get the cops come in, and they're telling him, and the look on Art's face when the cops are like, put your fucking hands in the air or whatever they say. And he's just like, he kind of like shrugs his shoulders and lets his face fall down. Like, really? Like, you're really interrupting what I'm trying to do here. And they, you know, do all their cop things. If you move, we're going to shoot, yada, yada. Art ends up reaching for his gun that's in his boot. And Art gets filled full of bullets.
No, he actually shoots himself.
He puts the gun in his mouth.
Shoots himself in his head. Like he.
Oh, okay. I forgot that he shot himself.
Yeah, because that's the best part. He actually shoots himself. Like and I think he has a smile on his lips. He just, at first he's like, okay, shrugs, takes the gun out, smiles, and puts it in his
that's
face.
That's right.
Shoots himself in the head. Like, and Then they say they found her. He was eating on her face. We didn't see that exactly, but they talk about it later.
Yeah, but they don't show any of what he had done to her.
Yeah, and then they get we cut to the morgue. Like I thought, okay, now the movie is over. I had already forgotten about the opening. That there needs to be something about the opening, right?
Yeah,
about the interview. And so then we get to the morgue. And they first bring in two, like one Mike with the head completely, and they said like you can pull the teeth out of his throat or something like that. And then that's the great thing, we actually get to see it then, that it actually his face is carved in, it looks so realistic and so disgusting. And we see that scene, and then he goes up to look for the for the killer because he was told the other is the killer. And he even before that, he's like totally chill and talking about how they're talking about like, get me a bacon sandwich. How can you think about eating? The typical thing we hear about
anybody morticians. Working in the morgue. Yeah.
Yeah. And then he makes a funny statement about art, opens the body bag, and then everything starts flickering. The lights, the power, radio turns on.
Yeah, the power starts to surge.
Something weird is happening. And then everything stops. Everything's back to normal. He looks around, looks down. Art smiles at him and attacks him.
Yeah. Which at first I wasn't sure how I felt about the supernatural element when I watched this movie the first time. I was like, it would have been really cool if he was, you know, a whole human and was able, you know, you can't shoot your brains out the top of your head and still live. But after a while, I was like, I want more of these movies. So I'm kind of glad that they did that because it gave them the ability to make another Terrifier if they feel up to it. And I just like art so much that I do want more of this. And I think that will, and it did lend itself well to some of his wounds that he had received, you know, like getting stabbed in the foot. He wouldn't have been able to walk around the way
exactly.
he was. But if he was some kind of a supernatural monster, then he had more of an ability to do that. So I think the ending was, in that regard, with doing that, really, it was a smart move. I think it was good to play it that way.
And then we, of course, get the final scene, which takes us full circle. 1 year later, a girl, Victoria, is rolled out in a wheelchair, and they say, like, we managed to reconstruct most of her face. It's going to be hard, but she's going to make it. And then, are you ready for your big interview? They turn around, and we see it's actually the girl from the beginning, from the opening scene. So this didn't happen, like, at the same time, no. This is the same story. We just go back.
Right. We go full circle back to the monster who had, and you get this idea of like evil creating evil, you know, it was almost like a piece of art transferred over into her because she killed that woman in a really fucked up way. She was a monster. So art had created a monster in a way through this woman. And even though that doesn't have a ton to do with the, it was just a fun little story to tie it all together.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun.
And also, I like that, like, it still stays completely true. Like, at the very beginning, she says, oh, no, he's really dead. But then we see him again. So, of course, we think, okay, he's not dead. He somehow survived. And then at the end, even though he is dead at the end, and we know why she thinks he's dead,
right?
We also know that he isn't dead. Although now, just like how I said it, I just realized that doesn't really make sense. Because probably someone would have told her in the 1 year since she was attacked that clown killed the mortician.
Yeah, but would you tell somebody who went through all that?
Well, maybe not her, but someone would know. Right. They wouldn't have this big news report on this girl where she says he's dead. No, I'm sure he's dead because they know he's alive.
Right.
They have to.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I just realized that. Probably no one thought about that. I think that's something, oh, this is fun. We'll do that. And no one thought about that. I just realized it right now that she probably would have known
that something happened at the morgue.
Because the mortician died like right after. Like, this is a year later. So a lot of time has passed since then. But I don't know. I really, really enjoyed this movie.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
What kind of surprised me is... I looked online and this movie is hated by lots of people.
Which I don't understand.
And actually, you just talked about Polar. And I think here, these movies are very similar in how they are received. Because Terrifier and Polar are both, what I thought, really good, fun movies. But both get lots of shit on and get horrible reviews. Because I think people are expecting something wrong. Because with Terrifier... you can't expect a big Hollywood movie. This is a low-budget movie. If you've seen the other movies, you know kind of what to expect. And if you go into Terrifier, knowing, having seen All Hallows Eve, you know... you kind of know the type of acting, the type of camera you get, but then you get blown away by how good Art the Clown really is acted in this, and how much character he has, and how awesome the practical special effects are. That's the kind of stuff that puts it over the top, and all in all, it's just an enjoyable time. Actually, just...
A fun slasher movie.
Yeah, actually, just talking about it right now, I want to see it again. I just want to sit down and watch it again another time, just because there's so many fun scenes that I just want to rewatch, and just basically, I want a big collab of all the scenes where Art the Clown does something funny, where he does some movement that looks funny, because, yeah. And that's the same with Polar, which lots of people kind of expected just another John Wick, and they wanted to be really dark and broody and deep. But it's just a fun graphic novel adaptation that's not taking itself so seriously, with over-the-top characters and over-the-top gore. And people are saying, like, that doesn't make any sense. Why do they kill them? Him in that order? Why do they kill him at all? Like, that, you don't think about that kind of stuff with this movie. You can nitpick any movie to that, but yeah.
Right. And you really can. And I've been rewatching, I watched Friday the 13th, 2, 3, and 4 recently. And for me, a good slasher movie is fun in that the killers are fun in a way. And that's a weird statement to make. Like, I realize that sounds weird to even say that. Like, I'm rooting for the killers. But there's something about a good slasher design. And when people actually put a little bit of thought into making the killer somewhat fun and enjoyable. And I think with Art, you get that the same way you get it with Jason Voorhees, even though, and I told Shana the other night, because everybody knows I'm a huge Michael fan, he'll always be my guy, that I'm a fan of the strong silent type. Like, I like the strong silent when it comes to my slashers. But you have to have a killer that people enjoy, that has something that makes them unique. You know, Michael can almost time travel, but Jason can almost time travel, whereas Michael almost gains power from stalking. Like, he's always stalking and watching. You always see Michael watching from the shadows. And with Art, they created this great new slasher that is just a fun mime-type clown character who is still very scary. Very scary. Yeah. But you can, you know, there's the really dark comedy elements that make it good for a chuckle. And you're right, though. You have to not go into some of this stuff like, oh, well, this doesn't make any sense because that would happen. Well, no, if everything made perfect logical sense, we wouldn't have any movies, because that's some of what makes a movie is nothing makes complete logical sense when it comes to these type of movies. And with Polar, you're right. It was the same thing. And Mads Mikkelsen is just so good. He's
awesome.
He's amazing. If for everybody listening, we talk about it on Those Movie Guys a lot, but Valhalla Rising. If you've never seen Valhalla Rising, it's unbelievably good. But, yeah, and he was so much fun. And that was a comic book. Like, for once, it felt like they really, you know, stuck to the comic book roots. And
they actually, I thought in that movie, they really managed to have these comic book over-the-top villains that we didn't have in a long time. Like, even in superhero movies, these villains are always kind of normal. Here we have these bad guys. Every bad guy in Polar has one thing that he's good at, and that's what he does. And his whole life is based around that, basically, if you look at the movie. And that's the kind of movie I sometimes want. It's just stupid fun, but but still well shot, well done, good special effects, and an interesting story. It keeps you interested. It's not like, oh, this is boring or something. There was no second where I thought, oh, this is boring. I hope something happens soon.
Right. So we've got Tag and Terrifier. Some good picks, man. It was a lot of fun doing this. I'm really glad you got a chance to see that, and I got a chance to see Tag. I do enjoy both of these movies a lot, and recommend everybody if you haven't seen them. I know Will watched Tag yesterday because he's like, I want to be able to actually just follow along with you guys and not, you know, have anything spoiled. So Will, awesome on you, man, for going out and checking that out before the episode dropped.
He actually told me. I asked him what he thought about the movie, and he said, let me just repeat what he said. It was a lot of fun, but very weird.
Yeah.
And Japanese.
I say that's a really good review of what tag is.
Yeah.
I mean, that could have been the tagline. It's a lot of fun. It's weird and very Japanese. Because that does explain the movie in a whole. So if you want to get into contact with us and let us know what you thought about Terrifier or Tag, you can email us at ihohpodcast@gmail.com or ihohpodcast on any of the social media platforms. You will find us there and just give us a shout. Let us know what you think. And we did get a new review for the...
Oh, we did?
Yeah, we got one. I know you, and if I remember right, you can't see the English or the American reviews? Is that right?
Well, no, it's like you can't see the German reviews.
I can
go to the English side, but I don't have iTunes, so I can't really see reviews at all.
Oh, okay. All right. So I'm going to read this one, and this comes from Philip Duke II, who I know fell over at my Celluloid Heart podcast, which is a great one if you get a chance to check it out. So his he gave us 5 stars. And he said, broadening my thoughts on horror. Not a big horror fan, but the more I listen, the more I want to watch more horror movies. I want to see Fulci's The Beyond, Cannibal Holocaust, and a new German-Austrian zombie movie called Ever After. So that was your pull there. Bring on the horror. I am ready. Had normally only watched your regular mainstream horror movies. Joe and Josh make me want to watch some great hidden horror gems. Film fans and horror fans, give this podcast a listen. Which I like that review a lot because we talk about horror so much, but I feel that we have a pretty broad scope of, you know, what we talk about and topics and things like that. And I am glad that it's maybe somebody listening is like, oh, I'll dig a little deeper. And, you know, people wanting to watch horror after listening to us, I think that was our whole... You know, just sharing the love of horror is really...
Yeah.
And
especially if people who don't really... Who say they're not really into horror,
right.
It's often that they just haven't found the right horror movies
right.
yet.
Yeah, and I had recommended one to him yesterday that I rewatched. One of my favorite... probably my favorite werewolf movie, Dog Soldiers. Neil Marshall. It's... I don't know if you've seen Dog Soldiers.
Not yet.
Oh, man,
I gotta get to it. It's not available over here at all.
Yeah, it just showed up on Prime over here, which I was very excited about. And that Dog Soldiers late phases, both really, really two of my favorite werewolf horror movies. But Phil, thanks for writing that review, man. Really appreciate
yeah, thank
it.
You.
And please keep us posted as you start digging through some horror. We'd love to hear your thoughts. Especially stuff like if you're going to start with The Beyond and Cannibal Holocaust. Cannibal Holocaust is it's an interesting one because it is good, but I feel like that is the exploitation movie that everybody, you hear that name, you know the name Cannibal, and it's just, I mean, hard to argue with that title. It's a badass title, Cannibal Holocaust.
And the German title, I just gotta throw this out there. That's the first time I've heard of the movie was the German title, which is Nackt und Zerfleischt, which means naked and mauled.
Nice. That's an even crazier title.
Which is also an awesome title, right? That's
right.
Like
naked yeah. and mauled. So yeah, thanks, Phil. And if anybody else could jump on there and leave a review, we'll read it on the show, and they are greatly appreciated. So for the International House of Horrors podcast, I am Joe Merle.
And I'm Josh.
And we'll be back next week with all things terrible, bloody, brutal, gory, and the macabre.